Hello, and welcome back to the XYZ Experiment Podcast. This is Luke, your Gen Z, and I'm joined today with Fee, your Gen X. Now, Fee, you've caught me at major life transitions. I've finished kind of the requirements for my course now, so I'm going to be finishing up very soon.
Yes.
And the next step now for me is full-time work in this career.
And for our listeners, what's that career?
That career is psychology.
Yes.
So hopefully very soon I will be registered, get my general registration to be a practicing psychologist, which is very exciting. And I'm in a very unique position just because of the way that studying and the requirements for psychology, where I'm in my late 20s now, and I'm actually yet to have had a full-time job. I've been studying now since basically 2017, so 7-8 years on and off. And so really work for me at this point, because again, with psychology, it's quite hard to find jobs that really align with that type of work when you don't have the qualifications, and rightly so. So a lot of the time for me, work has been a little bit more about just sustaining yourself, right?
Yep.
Like financially, something to do, and sometimes for a little bit of adjacent experience, but generally speaking, it's more sustaining you while you complete your studies. And so now I'm in this position where, okay, my area of expertise is now going to align with my occupation. And more so than that, my entire schedule is going to change. It's no longer going and either engaging in, content modules and going home revising. For me more recently, it's been you go and do a 8-to-4 placement day, then come home and study and revise and get ready for exams. It's more now going to sit with that more contemporary, classical 9-to-5 kind of schedule. And I was just kind of interested about your kind of transition into full-time work.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we'll be obviously touching a little bit on culturally how that's changed over the years and in different professions, how that looks like. You obviously start a lot younger full-time work in other professions, but generally speaking, what your observations were in terms of what your life looked like when you transitioned into full-time work.
Do you feel that the university was a job though? Like, I know you're not being paid for it, but do you feel like you were sort of doing those hours anyway and it was a job as it was?
I think that yes and no. I think in terms of a time commitment, it was definitely, when we talk about full-time load, it is the commitment of a full-time job.
Yes.
But I think that there's a little bit more, and again, depending on where you work, it will be probably a bit similar, but there's a bit more content creep where it's like there is no end.
Do you know what the weird thing for me was when I transitioned into work? And I was 21 when I started full-time work. So I did dentistry when I was 17, moved through 21 full-time. 6 days a week. So I used to work Monday to Friday and then Saturday mornings because you still got the energy for that at that age. But I missed the study. I missed it. And so at night time, I became a massive reader of books because I was so used to going home and studying. Whereas when you work, you don't have that anymore. I mean, you will have stuff you're going to have to learn, anyway. But it was a really strange transition to go to work and then come home and think, well, what am I going to do now? You're either going to watch TV or you would read, and I would consume books like there was no tomorrow. Just because I was so used to the reading. You must be looking forward to making some money now though.
Yeah, I being completely honest with you, like up until maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I was like, nah, this is cool, doing it for the love of the game, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But I'm getting a little bit more like, I'm ready to be compensated.
What are your goals for work? Like, I'm interested to know, I've just said to you, I work 6 days. Would that be in your wheelhouse to work 6 days? Like, as your generation, you guys tend to, right at the start, have a much better work-life balance than my generation ever did, Gen X. Mm. We just threw ourselves into work. Like, what do you see for work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think for me, it's hard for me to answer that right now because I am quite tired.
Yes.
So that's going to impact my thoughts at the moment. But I think In terms of workload, looking at my calendar, it'd be pretty similar to maybe not 6 days a week. I think it would still be 4 or 5 days, but I think what actually changes that is the variety. Like, it doesn't yes. have to be 5 days a week at the same place. Like, yes. you can supplement okay. your work with, yeah. you know, I think I might like to do something regarding, like, you know, tutoring, maybe something like marking within the university.
Mm-hmm.
There's the actual practical element, but then the research element as well.
Okay.
I think you can kind of, the short answer is I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the long answer is what will make it a little bit more refreshing for me as well is I'm pretty open to having a little bit of variety and splitting my time across different things, which yes. I think really helps, as you said, with developing that expertise.
Yeah.
The way that like requirements work with like, as a psychologist, like you have to do at least 30 hours of professional development every year. So yes. there will be lots of learnings. I think for me, what I kind of found hard was doing like the 9-to-5 placement and then coming home and having to continue to study.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was a little bit difficult. And so I'm happy for there to be the option that you can like go to work, finish work when it finishes, come home and relax a little bit more.
That's the really nice part of it. I know it's probably too soon to think this, but my thoughts are also going to, okay, you're going to work and you're getting paid for the work that you do. In your thoughts, is there any thoughts about doing any free work at all? Like working, you know, for disadvantaged people or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've never been against the idea of pro bono work. I think that if you can set that up and make it sustainable, that is like amazing. And it's funny because what pro bono work looks like in the modern world is a little bit different as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like it can be obviously actual psychological services, but even like creating like modules on YouTube or something
yes.
like that in a sense is can be pro bono work if you're just giving out free information for people and things like that. But I think there's definitely scope and an interest for me in that area. And I do think that like giving back in that sense is something that I'm really interested in as well.
What's the physicality of your work expectations? Like, do you expect to be seeing clients face to face or will some of it be done on Zoom?
That's probably a little bit more dictated by the clients than by me.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, from my experience so far, I would say that I've probably seen about 60 clients and had a couple hundred therapy sessions.
Yeah.
And I'd say about, I'd say probably 95% of them were in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's always that scope for seeing people over Zoom, I think, or over any type of online interface. I think if I were to do that, you'd have to be investing in the right equipment for it.
Yes. Would there be any expectation for you to be working from home at all? You know, like you see a lot of jobs where they do 3 and 2 and things like that.
I think generally you probably would be spending most time in the office.
Yes.
In this role.
Yes.
And if you were to be working from home, you'd have to be, there'd be assurances that where you're actually working is going to maintain confidentiality, because otherwise you're just breaching your role.
Because that's a big thing, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and your profession. Like,
not only from our side of things, but like when we're doing a Zoom call with the client, we have to suss as well, like, are they in a place that's confidential?
Yes.
And there are times where you actually have to say, hey, you might need to call me back at another yeah. time, or yes. like, would it be safe for you to go into your car and yes. like do this? So definitely scope for it. And I think that it'll become more and more normalized, I think, when the resources that we have kind of, I think, need to grow a little bit.
Yep.
I feel as though people still probably feel that there's quite a lot of barriers when it comes to interacting, even as we are now. I think this is great, but there's probably some barriers that wouldn't be there if we were face to face.
Yeah.
And when people are already a little bit kind of having strong feelings about being in therapy to begin with, sometimes that having them in person makes it a little bit kind of easier to talk through that. But that's definitely in the future for sure.
When you look at your career path working in your industry, so at the moment, you know, you're looking for a job, you're going to start working. Have you already got in your head about where you want your path to go, or are you just like, no, I just need to get into this and just start to work and see where I go?
Great question. And definitely the latter. I think at this point, I don't really have too many super strong feelings about where I want to go. Mm-hmm. I actually, it's funny because I think about some of my my lecturers and the professors at uni, and you see these really niche research areas that they've got. And I'm like, gee, I wish I just had one of those where it was something I just would even breathe and I can just already be there. But I think in order to get there, you need to have those experiences with a broad range of clientele. So at this stage, I'm just really keen to not, what's the word, is really to just be quite open-minded and try like a lot of different presentations across a lot of different settings and just see where that takes me.
Do you feel entrepreneurial at all about it? And I'm talking about once you finish your supervision, do you think, oh, I'm going to open up my own practice? Has that thought ever crossed your head?
Not really.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's funny you say that because growing up talking about becoming a psychologist, a lot of like my parents and my parents' generation would often be like, that's the end goal is to open up your own practice.
Yeah.
And that's something I want to bounce back to you as if that is like this end game. But I'm not necessarily sure for me if establishing my own practice is my end game.
Yeah. Yeah. It might not be like that in your wheelhouse. I of course became a dentist at 21 and began working for somebody else, but literally bought my own practice at 24. I bought half the practice at the time, and that just seemed normal to me. But I think with Gen X, that's just the way we were. You just naturally went into something, and then like a lot of my contemporaries that I went to university with, by the time we were all 24, 25, I would tell you more than 50% of us owned our own practice by then, even more, bigger number than that. Very few of us continued. We were either in a partnership with, you know, whoever we'd started working with, or some of them started their own businesses or bought a practice. I don't think young dentists today are that inclined like we were at the time, but that just seemed to have been the goal. Like, you'd get to work, you'd have some experience over a couple of years, and then you'd buy a practice. That just seemed to be the way that it went. And certainly the lenders, you know, the bank lenders were more than happy to loan the money to you at a very young age. I don't know if they do that now, as I don't know because I'm older. But yeah, so that was definitely, that was sort of the career we would think about at the time.
In terms of like career progression, I suppose, because it sounded like obviously it was quite normal to be aspiring to then own your own practice.
Yes.
Where to from there? Is it just to settle down and just build this?
So a lot of those people still, you know, we're in our late 50s now. A lot of those people still own those practices, you know, and they've worked there forever and built relationships up. And yeah, a lot of them have. The other thing as well that a lot of people in our profession was, back then you had to do 2 years of normal dentistry first, and then you could go into a specialty, you know. And so there was a lot of thoughts back then about specialization as well. And so some of the people who didn't buy practices were ones that were working up to just get that 2 years under their belt and then go on to orthodontics or oral surgery or, you know, those sorts of careers. I did have a couple of friends who'd bought practices quite young and then thought, oh, actually, I want to specialize and sell those practices and then go into, you know, studying for specialty. The big thing is the hardest part about, you know, then doing further study is you've had a couple of years of earning a very decent income, being a dentist back then, and then all of a sudden no income. and the expectations of the study was pretty tough. Like, you wouldn't have a lot of free time to actually earn an income. So sometimes some people who wanted to specialize didn't because of that financial aspect. You'd have to have someone like family or a partner or someone who could, you know, afford to pay the bills, you know, pay the rent or whatever. The other thing as well, which is probably very different between our generations, is, you know, not only were we starting work early, but we were buying homes in our young 20s as well. Like, I owned my first home, I think, at 22. Because, you know, it, like, if you do the stats with, you know, what a house costs today and what a house costs then, I think percentage-wise, it was cheaper in our day, for sure, to buy a home and compared to what young people own today. But a lot of us were working, you know, pretty hard because we all bought the car. So we all had, you know, my first big purchase was a car, literally. Mm. I bought that before I even headed up to my first job, took out a loan, and the loan was based on my future earning capacity, so got a car loan, and then literally bought a house a year later. I think, yeah, a year or 18 months later, it'd only be 18 months later, I had a house. Gosh, yes. And but I don't feel like your generation has the house before 24, you know, it just doesn't do that.
No, and that's made me think, Fee, when it comes to like think, because I'm sure there was lots of passion there, don't get me wrong, but just curiously, in terms of the way you viewed working, was it to sustain a lifestyle?
It was definitely, love of the work. You committed yourself. I loved being a dentist, so I really enjoyed that. But we were really, I don't know if it's the materialism of the 80s, but to have things was really important back then. And so, you know, you buy the car, you buy the house. We weren't traveling like a lot of people do nowadays. I didn't travel till a little bit later because I was so busy working. But you indenture yourself really quickly, you know, and then you have to work. You have to work to support that lifestyle, you know. Yeah. And I think about the sort of money I spent in my early 20s and 30s. That's why I had to work, you know, 5-6 days a week. You know, there was jewelry, there was bags, there was cars, there was, you know, business loans by then. But it was enjoyable. I don't have any regrets. When I look back on it, I don't think that was a hard time or a terrible time. It was actually quite enjoyable. But I feel the younger generations nowadays don't do that. And I don't think they should do that. I don't think they should, you know, take on so much debt so young. And I don't think the banks would allow that anymore anyway. But yeah, you just immediately went into all of that and just, you know, I've got young nephews now who are of age to get their driving license. Are they interested? Not in any way.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I was talking to one of my nephews saying, you know, he's coming up to year 12, and I was talking to him a while ago saying about, oh, you can get out, get a job and blah, blah, blah. And he goes to me, Fiona, do you know how expensive it is out there? I was thinking, yes, I do know, mate. You know, and he's going to stay home and earn the money but not spend it on a house or a car and maybe not work 6 days a week, maybe have a better life balance.
Yeah. Yeah, I think trying to kind of deconstruct why it is that I'm thinking about how I'm going to go about with work, it feels a little bit more like there is this freedom to try and align not only your expertise with a job, but also meaning and enjoyment with a job as well.
Yes.
And so, as you said, it you can enjoy your work. Maybe it sounded like you really enjoyed your work, but it was also a little bit of a means to an end in terms of what you enjoyed and what was your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Whereas now it feels a little bit more like the work has to be part of the lifestyle. Like that actually is something that indicates whether or not you're living the good life is if you've got a job that actually serves you, which is really fascinating. And I'm not sure how much that is playing into my thoughts about work, but what I'm also thinking about is just how does life change once you've gone into work? And so thinking back to that, How did you find that transition from stud, which I'm sure was already quite intense, but transitioning into then full-time work?
I loved the independence. I really loved it. And the financial independence from my family. I really liked that very much. I liked managing my own money. I liked running my own household. I liked making all those financial decisions myself and having the ability to do different things. So, yes, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the free time as well. And so, you know, I liked having my weekends free and I liked having my nights free and, you know, became heavily invested in other hobbies because it was, I think just because my course was so intense, I kept that intensity up in my life afterwards. And so, but it wasn't all about the dentistry. It was to do things after hours. So a lot of stuff to do with my hands. And I think just because dentistry is actually pretty creative, so a lot of creative endeavors. I did all sorts of stuff. I still did a lot of study, but in different areas. You know, I did some astronomy and I went to classes on that. And yeah, I just, the thing was, is I felt like once I left university, the learning didn't stop, but learning in a different way, if that makes sense. But I loved the independence. I really enjoyed that. It's hard though, because when you're young and you come out, maybe because you're a bit older, but when I was 21, people would come into my surgery and I had this one example where I was in theatre. I used to do a lot of theatre surgery work and I went into the hospital in Geraldton, St John of God, and we're getting it all set up, my nurse and I, and then we're just standing there and I say to the anaesthetist, "Oh, what are we waiting for?" And the anaesthetist goes, "Well, for the dentist to turn up." And I said to him, "She's here." And he went, oh my God. And then he started doing it, you know. So it was funny having authority at a young age. Like that was interesting because, you know, when you're 21 and you've got a lot of patients coming, a lot of your patients are a lot older than you. So actually having some authority, you know, that they could trust you and things like that, that was really interesting as well, and trying to develop that. And you'll have that too, you know, because you're in your early or late 20s, I should say. But yeah, like almost like, what do you know? You know,
yeah.
What's your life experiences?
Yeah, and that's definitely something we a lot of my colleagues and I contend with, is showing that it's not necessarily, I mean, obviously age is very important, but that's our role isn't to be a life coach. Our role is just to talk things through and just see that where that takes us. But that was just making me think as well, how did you go with the social changes when it came to transitioning?
As in friendships and things like that?
Or? Yeah, because I can imagine that there'd be a lot of, even if it's incidental hangouts through studying and going and attending lectures and things. How did it go when it was more kind of like you were having to be a little bit more active in organizing and maintaining those friendships?
So when I was in dental school, I actually was dating another dentist who was in the same year as me, and we were extremely social. There's only 30 of us in a year and we're extremely social. Like I had a very big social life at university, and when I left university, I broke up with that person, and I've been with that person for about 4 years. Wow. And I literally lost that social circle because of it. So because I left that person for my now current husband and it didn't go down very well at the time, because everybody just made the assumption him and I would get married and have children, and it didn't happen that way. And it's not that I fell out of love with him. I just fell in love with somebody else, and that happens. Mm-hmm. That's life. And I lost a big part of that social circle. Like that was really difficult for me, really, really difficult for me. Mm. And also I'd moved to the country. So for me, I had to form a lot of new relationships. And I formed a lot when I was in Geraldton, a lot of the dentists were quite young. So it formed sort of new relationships with the dentists there, and quite good ones. And then just within the community, just forming new relationships. And maybe that's why it's got a lot to do with me continuing to do a lot of after hours activities, because that was the way to meet people. So, because I feel in the country, I actually had a very good social life still. Like, you got to remember, when you're a medico in a small town, you're a big fish in a small tongue, a small pond, sorry, I should say. And so it was quite easy for me to socialise and meet people and do all that sort of stuff. The one thing that was really strange, though, in a small town, and you might find this in Tasmania, was seeing your customers outside of work. Was really strange. So I would, like, if my mum had come and visit me sometimes and we'd go out, you know, to the supermarket or the shops, my mum would go to me, "You know everybody." Like she would just say, you know, you go to the shops for 10 minutes and you're there for an hour, because she goes, "You stop and have a chat to everybody." And it's just because small town, you know everybody, you know. It just, and then this is another thing too. like I built a very nice house on the marina, and then everybody knew that. And so sometimes someone would come to my surgery and I'd say, oh, that crown's going to cost this much. And they'd go, oh, am I contributing to your new house?
Oh, gosh.
I'd actually get that. And one of my dentist friends in town, his dream had always been to own a Porsche. Like his absolute dream was to own a Porsche. Like he had photos of it all over his surgery. He got the Porsche. He got so pummeled by the local community about that, he sold it within 6 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, because people would just say, oh, am I paying for your Porsche? And so it was it's an interesting because he'd been a dentist for 15 years by then, so good on him. It's not as if he bought it his first year out. He'd been a dentist maybe 20 years by then. The guy had earned it. But it's interesting, those sorts of aspects as well.
Yeah, it's
not
it's
feeling quite, guilty about what you've earned.
It's quite unique with psychologists as well, because going back to that concept of confidentiality, if I were to acknowledge a client out in the street, I'm actually breaching confidentiality.
Oh, yeah. Probably same for me too.
Yeah. So I'm actually not, like if I were to come across them, we have a conversation about this in session, I'm actually not allowed to come up to them. They have to like actually come up to me.
Yes, that's your approach, you. Yeah, yeah. I was in a lift yesterday. A friend of mine was having a hand surgery done, and I hopped into this lift and there was another woman with her mother, and I looked at the woman and I realised that she had been a patient of mine. So I looked up and I smiled at her, and she looked at me and she said, "Where do I know you from?" She goes, "Oh, your face is so familiar. Where do I know you from?" And it was only the four of us in the lift, and I said to her, "I'm your dentist." And then we just started to laugh. And she goes, "Yeah, but not recently. Where are you?" And so as I got out of the lift, because they were going up another level, I held the lift door and I said to her, "I'm at such and such at such and such. Come and find me." The door's closed.
That's so funny. I feel like I've heard like multiple iterations of that story from you with so many people.
People always go, "How do I know you?" Okay, yeah.
Can I ask you three bits of advice, not just for me, but for anyone kind of transitioning now into that full-time role, whatever that might look like, just general kind of bits of advice about things you might not even be thinking about when you transition, just to kind of keep in mind?
Really read your contract carefully and get a lawyer to have a look at it.
That's a great one.
And have a lawyer have a look at it. I spent $2,000 on a lawyer a couple of years ago on a contract, which I resented at the time. And then when I left that job, it's the best $2,000 I ever spent. So you don't have to spend $2,000, by the way, but whatever contract you get, read it really carefully. And the other thing too is if you get the contract and it's not right for you, don't be afraid to say it's not right. Like, because a lot of people think, oh, that's it, and I can't question that. You absolutely can. And you can just say, oh, I'm not happy with that clause, or can we add this in? So make sure you're really happy. I think that's a really important thing, because with any contract, you always have to think about what happens when we divorce at the end.
Yes.
Literally. Yes. So the contract needs to be a very good contract. I think it's really important to, this is going to sound really namby-pamby, but you need to have a good vibe feeling about the place. If you go to an interview or if you're there and you think this isn't right for me, then you need to listen to that. You need to really – and get out, basically. So don't just think, I've got to stay here because, you know, I need to have a job and all that sort of stuff. The right job is there. And if you start a job and you realise this isn't the right job for me, then don't stay, because it's soul-destroying. Look for a job where you're going to get really good mentorship. That's really important. So particularly if you're first coming out, the mentors that you have at the beginning set you up for life, I believe, you know. And the other thing too is don't forget you outgrow those mentors over a period of time, and that's okay, you know. Yes. Work with a mentor where you can. If you don't get mentoring, I just think you're like just treading water. It's really important. So mentors are really important. And what would my third thing be? The work-life balance. I mean, everyone's going to say that anyway. But but I do think when you're young, work hard, honestly. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong at the start to really go at 100 kilometres an hour, you know, because that's when you've got your most energy. When you get older like me, you don't have that energy anymore. And I'm not an unwell person, but, like, I think it's really important to really go for it and really enjoy it and say yes to everything. Like, don't go, oh, I don't like that bit, so I'm not going to do that bit. Just do it, because the more you do it, the better you get at it and the more tolerance you develop for it. So, like, for me as a dentist, when I came out, I just did everything. I did surgery, I did root canals, I did fillings, I did aesthetic stuff. I'm now a bit more pickier about what I did, but the skill level was fantastic because of that. And so, like, even now, something can walk through my door and I can always fix it because I didn't limit myself. I went for everything. And yeah, it was scary sometimes. It was really scary to do some things on my own. But yeah, don't limit yourself as well. So that would be what I would say.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's perfect. Yes. Thank you for that wisdom.
Hey guys, it's Luke here. Thanks so much for listening to the XYZ Experiment podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like, follow, and tell your friends and family about us.